Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's your DoorDash. Hurry the fuck up. I'm sick of this shit. I quit. Here. Take it. Take your fucking Taco Bell and shove it down your throat, goddammit. I quit. Here. Here's your food. I'm done. Give me the... Here, take it. Ooh, nice house. Jesus Christ. It's your DoorDash. Don't y'all got Thanksgiving leftovers? Jesus Christ, you need all this damn food? Holy fuck, yeah, you got... Don't you got leftovers? Fuck.
This is the third time this week. Honey, if you need cooking lessons, I swear to God, I'll save you a lot of money.
It's your DoorDash. I got your damn Sonic. Third time this week. Jesus. Open the door. Here you go. Thank you. Here you go. Yeah, you have a good one. Here, take that. Don't forget that. You got two heat. I carried it up here, didn't I?
You're listening to Cobras and Fire, a Pantheon podcast featuring your hosts, Elsie Fox and Baco. Welcome to Cobras and Fire. My name is Baco, and today I am joined with the groggy Elsie. How are you this morning, Elsie?
I am as described. Just trying to get going here. I have full confidence that your wit, your storytelling, and your overall just engaging conversation style will get rid of the groggy, shake off the cobwebs, and get me to proper working order.
Yeah, a little mountain man in front of me, ladies and gentlemen. He was out there swinging a chainsaw around like it was like a knife through butter, cutting trees and neighbors' kids' limbs off. So you had kind of a rough day there with some bad weather in Colorado, huh?
I did, yeah. It basically did the thing where you get everything going in your backyard, you know? You're in the spring, and then the man... The person above decides, hey, there's just snow for one day and destroy trees and things like that. So, yeah, man, I'm telling you, but I do have a chainsaw, but it is battery operated.
Okay.
What do you think of that?
Well, is that better for you? I don't know whether that counts then.
it did the
if
job.
If you don't have to mix oil and gas and really get into the whole process, I don't think you're really doing it right. But I'm surprised they don't have an app that you just have that clears up all your trees for you. That you just download and then a real man shows up and does it.
Hey, I put gas in this thing. Listen, everything I have now, it's listen. Twitter is owned by a man that uses nothing but electricity. Mm-hmm. I am just, I've adapted that thing. The lawnmower, weed whacker. What else do I have? I have a goddamn glue gun. It's battery operated.
Jesus
Everything's
Christ.
Ryobi. Ryobi, it's all green.
Ryobi. Ryobi is like the Yamaha of, I don't know, presses and tools. But sure. Anyway, speaking of apps, on Mother's Day, I spent the day with my wife, my stepdaughter, and my grandson, and they took me to the Mall of America. You know, and look, shopping malls in general are basically, I don't know, if I'll go to get, if it's just me, I want to get in and get out. And I hate going to begin with because it's so big and there's so much shit in there. But, you know, it's a day with the wife and the daughter, and it was just something that they wanted to do.
What's the last time you actually rode the roller coaster there, or have you?
I have never done any of the – I mean, you got to remember when it opened, I was 20, 21. Mm-hmm. And there's a real theme park up here in the Twin Cities. So it's really a little kid's theme park. I mean, like, there's some rides that adults can go on, and there's, like, a zip line and shit. But it was definitely kind of – when it opened, it was towards the end of me even giving a shit about fair rides. So,
fair enough.
And it'll always be Camp Snoopy to me, not this dumb Nickelodeon universe that it is now. that's a joke for diehard Minnesota Mall of America people.
I did it like a tourist should. First time I went there though. But continue, please.
It's absolutely look. If you have never been and you're in the, it's worth your fucking effort. You know what I mean? It is kind of amazing to look at this thing and see this giant mall with an amusement park shoved into it, and there's so much shit, but whatever. Anyway, we're walking around. We're on the first level of Mall of America, and it's good that you've been there because you can actually imagine the parking, but I'll explain that in a second because it ties in. But you look like a guy that you've definitely used DoorDash, haven't you, or Uber Eats, something like that?
For the story, I'll go with it.
Okay.
Yeah. Go ahead.
So we're on the first level of the Mall of America. I don't know exactly. Well, I know exactly where we were at because we were standing outside of Cinnabon. And they have like a little list of stickers along the glass there. And on there it says like Uber Eats and DoorDash, all the food delivery services. I can't remember them all. But there's like three or four of them at least that are pretty common. And it dawned on me, I'm like, all right, there is a special place in hell for anybody that fucking sends an Uber Eats driver to get Cinnabon from the Mall of America. All right. Even if they do, which I don't know that they do, but my only thing is like, do they have a special parking spot where these Uber Eats and DoorDash people can come in? Because the food courts are on the third level. There's restaurants on every level. All these places probably offer it, including Cinnabon on the first level, down on the corner by the escalator. But at best, you get to the mall and you're basically ready to enter wherever you're going to park. It is, if you're sprinting, I bet you it's 10 minutes in and out at best. Probably more like 20 minutes if you got to park like a normal person, take the escalators down, go get your fucking Cinnabon, and then take it to somebody so that they can have a not fresh Cinnabon. I hope they fucking charge you like $30 because I don't fucking get it. But here's my question, because I have never understood this whole thing. Pizza places have been doing delivery for a long time. They hire their own drivers, but they have like a circumference, basically like an area they'll deliver to. They're not going to let anybody go, oh, I really want a Cinnabon. I'm going to order one from fucking Mall of America. And they assign it to drivers like they do like with just a regular Uber or a Lyft, right? And if the driver doesn't want to do it because it isn't worth his time, you know, then they get demerited if they turned it down and they get fewer options and stuff like that. So you actually get penalized for not taking these things. I just saw an article where somebody, a driver kind of lost her cool because she was asked to drive. It ended up being about 45 minutes and she only got $8. Now, with the price of gas right now, as a tip, I'm saying, I don't know what the other thing is. That's, I get it. You know, it's like you're asking me to drive fucking across the entire metro to give you this one fucking thing that's now not even fresh, and I'll touch on that in a second. I just never understood this as a business model, how it could be profitable for anybody but the app developer. It is like the music industry. You don't create anything. You don't do anything. You just have technology that you, and then you just take the lion's share and let the drivers deal with the bullshit, the pissed off customers, and then to the people that are actually using this shit, other than your stoned buddy that you mentioned off mic got some McDonald's from it. I get that. If you're too drunk to drive, whatever. But you should pay. You know what I mean? You know, like a pizza place, there's one pickup spot, and they load you up with pizzas, and they give you a route. These Uber Eats guys, to make any profit, they probably gonna be picking up at fucking 5-10 restaurants at a time and then delivering them. I just, otherwise, are you just going from restaurant to house and just shooting all over the place? I don't see how you can make money on this, especially with the price of gas right now. And then if something in your cupboard, like mac and cheese, isn't good enough for you, like, you know, because you just don't want to go out, why the fuck are you paying this extra? Like, because I have never used it. Maybe it is super expensive. It's like double the cost of whatever you buy. I don't know. But if the restaurants I like to go to, I like to go to because I like the food. And I want the food as fresh as possible. And that's typically sitting there. So, but even with like pizza, if I order a pizza, I typically go pick it up for that exact reason. I don't want to wait for you never know what's going to happen. You know what I mean? It's just, anyway. So in your experience, because you use this probably daily, what say Lewis Cannon on this? I've kind of rambled a bit.
No, I mean, first off, they work great for just randomly having people to come by and cut down your trees that fell down too.
So hey, like, while you're like here.
While you're here. And
yeah, I got you.
Like,
yeah, so. I ordered two burgers. One of them's for you. Now, can you cut down that tree?
Exactly. Yeah. That's right. but no, I mean, we had some kind of like a coupon or a gift card for DoorDash. And the first time that I used it was during the pandemic. And I remember that you would go to a menu on their, because you have to order through their app. Mm-hmm. Okay. So like they have certain companies that are on there, but the menu itself is already probably increased. If you look at, like, I'll just say Papa John's, for example, because Papa John's, for some reason, they do delivery, but they use DoorDash and these fucking services too when they get busy.
They
don't even have their own employees.
I think what they're doing there is they want to be involved. Like, you can still order and get your pizza from them and delivered, but a lot of people are just so fucking stupid and lazy. The moment they have this app and it's right on their phone, like everything in their fucking life is in the palm of their hand. Oh, it's so hard to go to the web on my phone now and order a pizza. So they just don't want to miss out on that cut. Anyway.
Yeah, probably. But let's say the pizza's $10 on Papa John's site, or if you call them, then it's usually $12 or $13 just for that, plus the service fee, plus the this, plus. So, yeah, it can be super expensive. And I got to tell you, man, whoever's ordering, the special place in hell is for – I don't care if it's from Mall America. If you're ordering Cinnabon and getting it delivered.
Any food court. If you're sending a fucking driver into a food court in a mall, fuck you.
That part I'm taking out. I'm talking about, like, if you are actually so lazy that you're getting that greasy ass fucking thing delivered to you. I'm saying you need to reevaluate your priorities in life, because that Cinnabon, I guarantee that's a $15, $18 Cinnabon by the time they're done bringing it to your goddamn door. What say you?
I actually, there's a mental health aspect to this thing. I think it's becoming more and more easy. Look, I get people are introverted. I'm married to one, but I don't think isolation is healthy. You know what I mean? And making it easier to isolate, you know, I mean, I guarantee that the guy who's shooting up that Buffalo grocery store, he used DoorDash.
Oh, daily. Yeah. He's probably getting the...
Left him time to write his manifesto.
He's probably... I'm going to say Panda Express was his jam.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's the thing, too. Like, Cinnabon and Panda is like Panda Express, right? They're only in fucking malls. Orange Julius. Like, yeah, man, I could really go for an Orange Julius.
I'd like to get that 45 minutes later, an Orange Julius. It's already gross, fresh.
There's I don't know if you want to call it a restaurant, whatever. It's a popcorn specialty place. They had the Uber Eats and DoorDash stickers. So it's like I could get a tin of fucking flavored popcorn from this place that, like, what the fuck? And look, I'm not saying people are actually doing this. I don't know. I didn't see any DoorDash drivers pick up, but I'm like, it clearly could happen, and I'm just like, that is cruel, man. That is, you're just, you do have no fucking respect for anybody but yourself, man. Selfish.
What do you think? You think the DoorDash is the Spotify of of the delivery industry? Is that your theory? Is it maybe it's the same dude?
Yeah, it could be. Yeah, you just develop some technology and then take all the money. But yeah, look, again, I've never used it, so maybe if you pay per mile, you have to throw it. You know, you toss in the tip, and then you're paying an upcharge, because I know DoorDash also takes a cut of the restaurant's money. You know, it's just like I never understood the business model. It seems like a really shitty, shady business for it to even be functioning. You know what I mean? It's like there's no way this can really be above board and be successful. That's all I'm getting at. I just like, because, you know, like at what point, if it is expensive, why are people using it? It's like, well, I could do that, or I could just go get the fucking thing for half the cost. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And I guess I know the Uber drivers are, you know, struggling right now. And the Lyft drivers, same things. All those rideshare services, because of the cost of gas and everything right now. But even before all that, I was just like, how can you make any fucking money doing this if all I'm doing is giving you a tip and paying for the burger? Who takes the money? And then it turns out the restaurants actually give a cut. Now it's nice to hear that you're saying that you have to order through the menu on the app, which is a bit of an upcharge. So. And that at least makes a little sense.
Well, I just like the fact that you are a defender of artists and Uber Eats drivers. You stick up for the creative types and I'm just going to do this for a bit until I quit in 2 months and fucking hate my life.
Yeah.
People too, you know?
Yeah. You know, all right. So fair enough. Everybody cancel Spotify and don't use Uber Eats. that's my message. That's manifesto. Correct. And then go outside, breathe some fresh air, man. You know,
cut down some trees.
Yeah, help LC move some trees. I guarantee you won't make them talk to you while they do it. So if you are a little shy, a little socially, you know, distant, you know, that'll work too. Just move some trees in LC's backyard, and you still have some companionship. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
Get a cat. I think in back-to-back episodes have covered to some degree Skid Row and their new singer. And one thing has popped up on my radar anyway. I'm pretty sure that Stephen Michael, host of the Grown Up Rock podcast, has a Google alert setting that lets him know anytime somebody says anything negative about the new singer. Because, you know, you'll see these posts like on Blabbermouth, Brave Words, Metal Sludge, all that stuff. It'll be like, here's the new singer singing 18 in Life. And I'll see, like, the first comment will be something negative, and I think the only reason I see it is because right below it is Stephen Michael basically telling that person, like, to, you know, move out of your parents' basement and get a life or something like that. You know what I mean? Every time, it's just like, Stephen, you know, because I chimed in for one of them. I just told him, Stephen, he's not going to fuck you. it's like,
wow.
Yeah, you know, and there's a lot of that going on in our podcast deal right now with, you know, people like, you know, because Stephen likes the boys, that Heat band. And, you know, he's clearly a Skid Row fan, so... he seems to be extra defensive about this singer for some reason. So hopefully, you know, when he listens to our episode, we're still friends, because I make fun of the guy's herky jerky stage movements. But anyway, Stephen, move out of your parents' basement. I can't remember what he actually said, but you know, he's always like defending him. You know, he keeps it clean.
By the way, What's the deal with that? With adding that little rewind in there, what did I say that you had to bust me on again?
You said this one kind of I left in there because I think it kind of helps you a little bit. This one isn't, but where I was going with that is that like you're like, yeah, I watched it, and then like your next comment is like, well, I haven't watched it, and I'm like, all right, you just fucking said you watched it.
Whatever. Goddamn lawyer. Keep going.
Oh, well, that's it. So, yeah, Steven, hopefully the matchmakers, Tinder to hook up or whatever, will align Steven with Eric from Skid Row.
They carry the torch for Heat, the Poonie and the Michael. I mean, they're big fans, all this stuff like that. I've tried, and I say it's Heat is a if you like Eclipse but want to hear a really bad version of Eclipse – listen to Heat. That's my version of that for like the Swedish type bands.
Well, another guy from Sweden, a little more historical figure. He's making some news. Did you see the kerfuffle between Jeff Scott Soto and Yngwie Malmsteen?
Oh no, they have a new one.
Yeah, let me tell you what. Basically, Jeff Scott Soto went on social media, Facebook or Twitter. I saw it on Facebook, but it was a screenshot. And he says he went to. A local club. He kind of like, I go to this place all the time. A band was playing that I wanted to see. I'm friends with, so I went there to check them out. Unfortunately, my former boss was the headliner that night, so my plan was to just watch these guys and leave. And now he was talking about Yngwie Malmsteen. In his initial post, I don't think he called them out. Anyway, he said he was told that the show was going to be canceled if he didn't leave, so he left. Basically saying that Malmsteen found out he was there. And said, I'm not going on stage if that guy's in the crowd. So I'm going to cancel the show right now. So then everybody that we know, because I think Jeff Soto is an attainable guest. That's my conspiracy theory. Suddenly just came pouring to his defense. By the way, this is ridiculous. I'm not defending Malmsteen on this. And I believe Jeff over Malmsteen if I have to pick a side. But I'm like, sure. Well, you know, there are two sides to every story. You know, and then, of course, there is a second side, and Malmsteen comes out and basically just says he's a fucking liar. Everything he does is, you know, he's not that important to me. I don't care. Now, for those that aren't aware, Jeff Scott Soto was the singer on Malmsteen's second album. I think he might have been on the first one, too, but there's only like one or two songs that actually have a singer. But the second one, Marching Out, and that, which happens to be my favorite Malmsteen record, but... And that's where I first heard of Jeff Scott Soto, and then I really didn't hear him again until he did Journey. I'm sorry, Sonny Poony, I just didn't hang with him as tight as you did. I know that guy can break down that dude's career for sure. But anyway, yeah, look, Malmsteen has a track record. I have some friends that had some personal experience with him in a recording studio. This would have been like in 2000 in Florida. And the guitar player from Jesus Chrysler, his brother's band was down there. They got a record deal and were recording. And Malmsteen was in the studio next to him. And he threw a case of empty Heineken bottles in their trash. And so they come to the studio the next day, and the guy who owns the studio sees all these fucking beer bottles, and he's like, fucking Yngwie. So he grabs them and he throws them in front of the Yngwie's door for the studio he's working. And then they're recording hours later. Yngwie storms in, just fucking throwing a fit, like, you know, screaming and yelling at this guy. So, and then of course the whole Unleash the Fucking Fury, audio. That's a gold, and he doesn't exactly have a great track record. Considering who we're talking about and what we're talking about, it just seemed like the obvious suspects were like, oh, what a class. You know, it's like, all right, whatever. I just don't care that much, I guess is all I'm saying.
Yeah, I mean, for me, I'm just proud to say I am Yngwie Malmsteen free and Jeff Scott Soto free for 48 years. I have nothing from either of them in my collection, so I have no opinion either way. And I will say that Jeff Scott Soto is a great singer. I had never heard anything by him until I saw him on the Monsters of Rock Cruise, and he did a thing with Beeler where they do kind of a comedy / music routine, and he was quite entertaining. So if I'm gonna pick a side just from meeting a guy and seeing him interact with other human beings, I'm gonna pick Jeff.
He's definitely more believable, but he's also like he recently got in the headlines saying he has no idea what the problem with Journey was. And that turned into a whole thing where, like, Neil Sean even chimed in. He's like, I don't know what the fuck he's talking about. This has been discussed. So there is that. So, you know, and he didn't need to run to social media and post this, but I'm not being critical of him for that. I would have absolutely done the same thing. I would have been like, that motherfucker, seriously? You know what I mean? I say that, you know, just saying, you know, if you want to fucking put this stuff out there, you're going to have to deal with how things blow up. And then, of course, he had a subsequent explanation where some people are like, you know, Jeff clears it all up. And he really just repeated what he said the first time and then said things like, my life is good. I don't really wish to have negative energy and all this stuff, which then again, why, you know, and who knows? Maybe alcohol was involved. He seems like a healthy guy, so I'm not really sure that he's a drinker. But hey, have you seen these shows that Eric Miller's putting on in his house?
I was just going to segue to that. That's quite impressive. I actually messaged him and everything. It was like, dude, what is going on with this? Like, this is next level. Like, I even said, like, Rock's not dead. It's Eric's house. You know what I mean? Like, that is bad fucking ass. What?
It's not very rocking.
Have you seen their show is good?
Yeah, no, it's cool. I'm all for it. That was not a critique. He posted a picture of some of the snacks he had, which looked amazing, by the way. And I was like, that is the least rock and roll thing I think I've ever seen. Also, yummy. It's really cool. I think he calls it Stone Turtle Concerts, I think.
Something like that. I don't know what that means. Stonehouse. But yeah, like house concerts putting on this. So anyway, Eric Miller from the Pods and Sods Network is who we're speaking of, doing a little bit of promotion. I know he's done that in the past, but I don't think he's ever done it at his house. So that's pretty cool, though, to organize. You know, you want to see some shows, put it together. But there's a lot I was thinking about, like, all these things. Like, even if I had this set up, I'm not sure if I want anybody in my house that I don't know slightly before they come, you know what I mean? Like to have a show. I mean, I guess if you're having more chill shows, you're probably going to be fine with who's coming over. But I'm definitely not organizing an overkill concert in my backyard or anything like that to get the type.
You know, backyard I think is easier to accept than like in your living quarters.
Yeah, but that's not going to work in your neighborhoods. It's going to be probably a phone call made.
Well, you just got to get the right permits and, you know, follow the noise ordinance and things of that nature. There's hours within the days and decibels that you don't break. It's really nothing that anybody can do if you follow the right steps. But yeah, those things look cool. I will tell you this. I noticed that Beeler and Soto at least used two jokes that they used on the clips I saw on the Monsters of Rock cruise. So now I have to officially shift them from like a couple guys just make cracking wise to they're basically the acoustic guitar version of dueling pianos for anybody that's seen that. And to me, that always kind of loses its luster. But, you know, those are two really fucking talented guys, both great singers. I would prefer they just did the music, because after a while, when you start seeing the same, when it becomes a routine, you know, then it's like stand up and
I will push back on that and that I like the same jokes all the time.
Spoken like a true Weird Al fan.
Exactly. You got a routine, motherfucker. You hone that shit and you put it on. You tell me if it works once, you're not going to do it again. Fuck that. Doing that like that. If you got the banter down, come on. I don't want to hear. Listen, I don't care that it's vodka and orange juice. It's not vodka and grapefruit juice. If you're doing some stage rap, you get it down. You hone it and you repeat it.
Yeah, but that's like a bit routine. When you make it seem like you're just kind of riffing off each other, and that's the vibe you're putting out there, but it turns out it's not. To me, it kind of loses something a little bit. Now, look, they're very talented, they're very good at it, and people enjoy this. So I am not trying to say don't. Maybe my comment's more. It's just not for me.
That's fine. That's fine. Yeah, you don't like anything that has to do with humor and music ever. You are you get mad anytime there's any kind
depends
of jokes
what you mean.
Throw in. Well, I think
I think the Foo Fighters have a great sense of humor. but their music is not part of the humor. You know what I mean? It's like the music is one thing. Their sense of humor comes out in their stage show, their videos, things of that nature. Now, if you're saying I don't like joke songs, yeah, for the most part, and some of them can be pretty good. But it, like a joke, you hear it once, it's pretty good. But you know, I'm not going to go see like Chris Rock. I'm not going to follow him and watch seven shows in a row of the exact same routine. I understand that he's doing the same routine in the next city.
I think that probably their routine is based on core riffs that they probably do riff on top of that.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying?
Like, yeah, you're going to get something new each time. That's not what I'm suggesting.
Right,
but
right.
Yeah.
I think you have to have at least a otherwise, how are you going to do that show? I think there's got to be at least something you hang on
well,
to.
Well, you could just play music, bit. You know. I you
know. Well, then that would make it. That would make it. Yeah, you could.
You could have actual, real banter between the stuff. You could actually talk and still have that same setup and not rely on the same little quip and joke each time. You're asking me, so I'm telling you, these are things you could do. You could still have that same formula where you set up and do the same songs, but you don't make the same little quip every time. You know what I mean? Otherwise, and again, only in the sense of like you're portraying it as this kind of like, look, we're just two buddies. You know what I mean? Like Dueling Pianos, the first time you see it, it's like they're riffing with the audience. They're claiming to take requests, and then they just know all these songs. You know what I mean? And it's like, God, these guys, how do you? And then you see them again, and it's two different fucking people. So you're like, wait, I thought it was a duo. No, it's just whoever we can get from the Dueling Pianos school. And they're telling the same jokes, playing the same songs that people, for some reason, they're all requesting the same shit every time. And then it's like, well, this is not the same as a stand-up comedian telling the same material in different cities. These are just basically pre-scripted kind of, and they pitch it as like this kind of like loose thing. I'm taking this way too far. This was supposed to be something nice about Eric Miller hosting, because he's done other artists. Those are the ones I think that are probably closest to our ilk.
But. Yes. But I would say that I think it's a perfect time to segue out of this to what Eric Miller always thinks we play, which is, I believe, Trapped. Trapped or Five Finger Death Punch.
Yes, one of those two. He has a list of bands that we've never played. But I think I put Five Finger on one time. But never Trapped, never Saliva. What are the ones he lists? I don't know. It's funny.
It's anything that he has like a list from Octane that he never played.
I think like maybe at one point he put together a list of like 20, because it seems like he rips out two or three new ones each time.
He does.
And it's like,
does.
I don't know who that is.
Nope.
Yeah, you know, well, you know, for Eric, we'll play a Taiketto song.
Starring Vince Neil.
Yeah, he's getting into the advertising game, as a pitch man. He was kind enough to show up somewhat sober. What is it? It's a money loan thing, right? Like, is it a payday loan kind of deal, or like
it's a payday loan? It's a payday loan service, which that whole industry, by the way, is interesting to me. basically companies that I think that they look up your employer and then they give you like a 25% advance fee on your next paycheck.
Yeah.
It goes against you, and it just that whole market is just so evil to me.
It is a fucking endless cycle for people that get, you know, you can get wrapped up in that shit and you never get out of it.
Right.
You know, it's like a high interest car loan or something like that. You know, it's just, I don't know. Yeah, well, that whole, when Ron Keel was moved to South Dakota, the guy who was financing all that, that pawn shop, the racetrack, the radio station, that whole empire was built on those payday loans. And I remember, like, the state passed a law capping the interest at 36.5%. And he's like, fuck this. Shut everything down. It's like, you can't make money. That's not fucking profitable for you. Jeez, yeah, how much were you fucking charging? I mean, it's like, just shady.
There must be so many times that things get defaulted on.
Yeah.
But at the same time, those things are based on, I'm not going to get into the weeds of it, but usually it's just based on the name of the company. They're not credit checking the fucking person they're getting the check from. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely. Anyway. So who better to represent something like this shady fucking kind of business than Motley Crue frontman Vince Neil? I did enjoy like his attempt at, because he's clearly fucked up in the video.
Yeah, all right, that loan approval machine rocks.
Well, let's just describe what it is. It's a payday loan ad, but it involves him for some reason. He's driving, hopefully not drunk, what's that fucking thing on the ice rink?
Zamboni.
He's driving a Zamboni, which I'm still trying to make the connection of what a Zamboni and a hockey rink has, or just ice in general, has anything to do with a payday loan. Did you get the connection there?
I think so. I think basically, you know, all these arenas are corporately named.
Uh-huh.
The company that Vince is pitching named this minor league hockey arena or something like that.
Okay. So that's that. And his Zamboni. First Zamboni I've seen. Not a big hockey fan, but I didn't know they had license plates. It says Motley on the back of it, which how is that? Does that mean Motley Crue Light allowed him? Because I thought he couldn't, you know what I'm saying? Like that.
Yeah, I thought of that exact same thing when I saw that, because I was like, and it seems that I thought that the video might be, like, actually, the commercial might not exist by the time you and I talked. You know what I mean? It was like, like once they said, like, come on. Because didn't he open Dr. Feelgood's down in your old neck of the woods?
And then they had to change kiboshed. And Shiprocked used to be called Motley Crue's back in the day. I'm not sure if people know that. It kind of evolved into this, like, basically this other cruise. But it used to be called Motley Crue's. They killed that. So anytime does a baller move and then gets, I think he like basically asks for forgiveness all the time for these deals he does.
Sure.
You know what I mean? But then all of a sudden it segues into this awesome computer like network to get the loan approval. And it has a bunch of ladies that I guess are like Dr. Feelgood ish. You know, it's got the lab, they got the lab coats on and, you know, they're all like hotties and stuff like that. And then all of a sudden what happens for Vince? Vince himself is applying for a loan and biggity bam.
Yeah. All right. That loan approval machine rocks.
He gets approved.
Oh, it's right.
He goes, hell yeah. Time to rock or some bullshit. Play the clip.
Yeah. All right. That loan approval machine rocks.
The guy who's got a lot of lows, this is the low moment for him, I think, a little bit. This is probably not the kind of thing that the rest of the band and maybe the members of Def Leppard didn't really need out there right before this tour. But
the point is that I thought was funny is that, like I just said in the beginning, these payday loans are based on the creditworthiness of the place that's going to give you a paycheck in 2 weeks. So he was actually hesitant. He was like thrilled that he got approved because his was based on the tour, the tour money coming in for these upcoming concerts, and he needed some money now. So he's like, "All right, enough of these bots bought the tickets, and and I'm going to be fronted." Now I want to say that I'm going to jump in here real quick too, because now I'm finally woken up. I went again, like I mentioned last episode, I was curious about this. So still, the stadium tour, there's not a singles ticket you can buy. It's 100% sold out at Coors Field by the bots and everything like that. The only thing you can get is authorized resale tickets for $200 for the shittiest seats at the fucking Coors Stadium. Bull fucking shit. That's all.
Even on secondary markets, because I've actually been watching that about once a week, and I compare StubHub and Ticket King to see if I can buy the same ticket on both sites, because my theory is they are basically, they have access to every ticket and whoever sells
it. Mirrors, at least in mine, mm-hmm. it's the same. I did the same thing. I'm like, where is there somebody just trying to dump them? So those payday loans are working very well for him right now, because the fact is it looks like the stadium tour is going to be a complete success and it's 100% sold out and everybody's happy to pay $200.
I got a feeling those prices are going to drop. But there are the two shows I looked at, I think, were Milwaukee and Minneapolis. And yeah. every section has 30 to 60 to 70 seats available on the secondary market still for these sold out shows. To me, it's not sold out if I can buy that many. You know, look, if there's
a thousand or less
tickets available on the secondary market, you can call it a sellout. But, you know, fuck, every fucking section has, I don't know what the percentage is because I don't know how many seats are in each section, but it looks like about 200 seats and there's 60 tickets available. And both places are selling them. And I could probably get it on Ticketmaster's fucking secondary site. I'm sure Live Nation has their own shitty fucking resale market, you know. I think what it is that Vince needed a little money up front because he's with this tour being pushed off for 2 years, his cash supply is dwindling, you know. Sure. Fucking cheeseburgers and vodka is not cheap.
So. No, I mean, man can't live on Cameo alone.
Yeah! All right! That loan approval machine rocks!
Exactly. So. But yeah, he was almost as... At least he sobered up from that. For this thing, you know, but God, he looks embarrassingly bad in this thing too. It's just like, I don't know. Look, if I was paying him, and that's what I got, I'm like, no, you can.
I'm just trying to figure out how does that connect? How does that anything like that connect? Why is that? Why is Vince? Why is a payday loan place using Motley Crue or any rock? Like, is this? I don't get it. Like, I don't even get the connection.
Well, he was up for the reverse mortgage ads, but I think Tom Selleck got him.
Your home's equity could add a fourth leg to your retirement plan. Much better. Not a three-legged stool, but a home equity chair. Four legs. More stable.
I guess they don't connect that one either, but Tom Selleck is very appealing to 65 to 80 year old people and all of his little cop shows, whatever, you know.
Is it actually Tom Selleck? I just guessed. I can't remember.
I'm gonna say yes. I'm just gonna go with it.
Four legs, more stable.
Or the corpse of Burt Reynolds. It seems like this is becoming a more recurring opportunity for us, but there are updates almost every episode now from previous stories that we talked about that I feel like I need to alert the audience to. I have another one for you today here, Lewis. You ready for it?
Oh, please.
All right. Going back to when we were talking about the whole Santa Cruz, you know, nonsense and that whole exchange between Jericho and the singer. The singer of Santa Cruz, apparently his name is Archie Cruz. Archie Cruz, Santa Cruz singer, says, Chris Jericho is not a real rock star, and Fozzy's crowd is pretty much semi-retarded wrestling fans. So,
beautiful.
I didn't think we were allowed to use that word anymore.
No, they use it a lot with kissed hard, stuff like that. There's certain, apparently exceptions. That's just fine.
Yeah.
I've always thought that's kind of amusing. Like,
no, yeah, you didn't, but you didn't say it right. It's kissed Todd.
Oh, kissed okay. Todd. Okay. No, all right. All right. Fair enough.
Fucking kiss Todd's.
Yeah. All right. So that's you, as long as
Bean Town.
Oh, okay. That's just, I think that term existed way before Shout Out Loudcast.
Possibly, I don't know. I just want to make sure that some people out there know I am not claiming any credit for the term. I do not know where it came from.
Nope. So.
Well, I mean, I got nothing else on that. I just thought it was funny.
Yeah.
All right.
No, it's good. Threw some shade at any wrestling fan out there.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's exactly. Is that really an audience you need to piss off? I mean, don't you think the average Santa Cruz fan is probably a wrestling fan?
I would think so. You know, if you're going
to be some crossover there,
if you're going to let Fozzie into your life, you guarantee you've watched at least one wrestling move by Jericho, I'm assuming.
Well, yeah, Fozzie, of course, but I was saying Santa Cruz. Like, you know, they might actually be pissing on their own audience there. But anyway, let's move on from that. There's nothing more to say, really. Other than that it's entertaining, there really isn't much there. There's been this Neil Bogart movie in the works, and the first trailer came out. Apparently it's going to be shown at the Cannes Film Festival there over in France, I believe. And
I think it's Jersey.
Is it Jersey? Cannes Music Festival?
Cannes, Jersey.
Yeah, okay. Whether we end up seeing it or not is yet to be seen, just because the movie industry is kind of weird like that. I know Neil Patrick Harris was originally scheduled to play Neil Bogart, so I was a little disappointed to find out that it's Michael Ian Black now, but he'll be fine. The trailer looked like it was actually a pretty well put together kind of movie. And then I saw Kiss. I was like,
let's back up a little bit. So Neil Bogart, president, wasn't that his official title? Was president of Casablanca Records.
Yeah. The first band he signed and released was Kiss, their debut record. Went on to do all the disco stuff in the 70s.
Village People, Parliament, Funkadelic. Parliament,
Donna Summer.
Yep. Okay.
The Johnny Carson record, which allegedly almost destroyed the record company. I'm not really sure how releasing pre-recorded audio of Johnny Carson is going
to... They press too many, Baco.
That story only made sense when I was too dumb to question anything. Anyway, this movie does look interesting. I definitely think Neil Bogart, if anybody is familiar with the history, a very interesting guy. One of the old school kind of music industry people that, you know, really approached things from a different aspect and you know, were creative in how they like marketed and you know, he's done some shady shit too. And, you know, but drugs, excess, money, you know, it has everything, highs, lows, all the good stuff. Plenty of his story would make a great movie is all I'm getting at there. But so
to be clear, it's a biopic about the whole label and him, not Kiss.
That's correct.
Kiss is one part of that movie. Yeah.
I think even the cursory Kiss hater, if they're being honest, has to admit that is half of the Casablanca story is Kiss.
Okay.
If you ever read the book And Party Every Day?
Yeah. I have not, but it actually upsets me that I did not get that because I remember seeing that. It came out like, what, 10, 12 years ago, and I didn't
something like
pick
that
it up.
Yeah.
Is it good?
It's really good, and I think this movie might be based on that. I'm speaking out of turn a little bit there, but for some reason, when I first heard about this, that was my memory of it. But yeah, I mean, there is, you know, it talks about everything, but I, you know, if you cut out all the Kiss pages, it would be about half as thick. So,
okay.
You know, that's the basis for my math there. Anyway, I thought it was odd. They show Kiss. And I don't know. I think they could have maybe. There's a Kiss tribute band called Mr. Speed that visually looks better than these guys do. Mm-hmm. So maybe that would have been an avenue to go. I don't know how much these guys play a role as far as acting in the movie, though. That might be part of it. But they slightly altered all the makeup, more Gene than the other guys. But then you have the Kiss logo right behind them. So it's like, well, this doesn't seem like it's a licensing thing. It's like almost like, it's almost like one of those things where Hollywood just wants to, like, you know what? I don't see Gene in that makeup. I see him like this. It was weird.
That's your theory?
Well, okay. That's what it comes off like. It's like, you know what? I don't think Spider-Man makes these little gadgets that shoot the webs out that he makes. I think it comes out of his body. And so they make these changes because they almost want to be part of the story that already exists. And I think that's how it feels to me. I don't know what's happening here, man. Because at first I was like, they must have had problems getting KISS to sign off on this. And then you see the giant KISS logo. I'm like, well, that's more than the makeup. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's the part that I was super confused about. Because from
and it's not like cropped in the corner. It's fucking there.
Yeah. Right. It's like the production looks pretty good. You know, you see the outside area. They're walking by the buses. They're basically going to, you know, it's like a Bohemian Rhapsody bullshit timeline story. I don't know. There's some issue with Aerosmith, opening for Aerosmith or whatever that is.
Yeah.
And that they don't want them to use the pyro and whatever. And then it looks kind of like what you would imagine, I guess. And again, I was watching this on my phone, so I don't know if the actual, like,
I saw it on my phone as well.
Yeah, I don't know if the audience looks fake or whatever, but from that small screen, it looked pretty cool with the angles and the production. But again, what you're talking about is, like, there must be some next level thing where, yes, we'll give you the KISS logo, but something's tied up with all the makeup, because that has to be a rights issue. I don't think it's being a creative thing, because it is bizarre. Like, the star is like, it's the star, but it's not filled in. Like, it's all this like ways to get around it. It's bizarre.
And Gene, like, has like almost like an X on his face instead of all it turns out that KISS has been lying and Ace has been lying all these years. The guy who owns all the makeup trademarks is Peter. And
something.
So I didn't get a good shot of Peter, but I'm guessing his is spot on.
Do they think that the average person, because they're watching for this biopic, is not going to notice that? And they're not a big, because it's, do you think that's the move too? Is like, maybe it was that they could have it, but the price tag was X. You know what I'm saying? Like, okay, fuck you guys. You want this stuff. Well, we'll give you the KISS logo for X, but the makeup is going to be Y. You know,
that would seem weird that they would separate them like that. Okay, what do you want to use?
Well, it has to be. How could they have the KISS logo in there otherwise?
That's why I think it's more of an artistic decision. You know,
I'm going to say no on that part.
Because Hollywood isn't known for doing that. Other than every fucking thing.
You can have your theory on there. I think it was basically that there were two price points. You want this, it's this. You can have that. And they're like, well, with our budget, we're not going to pay for that. So we'll just kind of fucking do quick angles and try to get around that.
Like when Hello Kitty wants to use KISS, they have that same kind of deal. It's like, well, what do you want? Do you want the makeup? That's this price. Do you want the KISS logo? It's an additional. Or you can, you know, cherry pick either one a la carte. I mean, that doesn't, to me, a licensing agreement would be more all inclusive. So if they got permission and then chose to me, and again, I guarantee, if you're not a KISS fan, you're not going to watch this and go, oh, I have no idea who this is. That makeup's not right. You know what I mean? Which has always been my beef with them carrying on with the Ace and Peter makeup. It's like, you could put anything on those two guys. And first of all, the diehards would love the new characters, and the people that aren't that into it wouldn't fucking know the difference anyway. And that's, so yeah, the audience, I think, you know, that this is not a movie necessarily geared towards KISS fans. It's a whole story. KISS fans, of course, are going to have interest in it because of the whole Casablanca connection. But that's why I think it's, you know, and again, neither one of us know. We have our theories.
Or maybe they did it intentionally so a bunch of idiots like us would talk about it on their different shows.
There we go. Spike up our press.
Yeah, just slightly change the makeup, make all the lunatics like us talk about it, hype up the movie, free publicity, great move.
Between the three theories we've now shared, that is the most believable one.
I'll go with it.
Yeah,
I'll actually agree.
Oh, right on. Now I know that we're on the same page now. Mm-hmm. Anyway, you know, it's probably going to. But this seems like a kind of movie that isn't going to be in the theater with the way things are set up
this
now.
This is Netflix.
Netflix, Amazon Prime, something like that.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. This is definitely
Hulu,
one of those two.
Disney yep. Plus.
Yeah,
probably go. Not Disney.
No, I don't think it's in their zone. No.
Yeah. You know what? How is there a Disney movie that has nudity?
I'm going to say that probably something when they did the shift in the 80s, something's got to, right?
Yeah, like the boob or something.
Just one boob. But no, like the 80s, I remember it was a thing where Disney all of a sudden had a rated R movies, but I think they put it under like Hollywood or a different like
that's right. I forgot about Hollywood
label or something like that, because like Down and Out in Beverly Hills, that was like the first rated R movie with Nick Nolte and some fuck
Bette
I don't
Midler.
Remember. Is that it? Okay, yeah. Okay, because that was the big like ooh, we're not going to be there's no more Herbie. Movies. We're getting a little risque now for live action, because that was their deal, right? No cursing, no boobs.
Lindsay Lohan in the Herbie remake just flashed into me. So they could have thrown some nudity in that, you know, back when she was in her prime.
Keep an eye on your target and a finger on trigger.
But speaking of nudity, how about Gene in a robe?
Mm. That's a nice segue. Yeah, you're of course talking about the sound check that someone filmed it. Now, isn't it kind of weird that this is the first time you've seen one of these fan film sound check? Do you think it is just because Gene's in a robe?
I think I've seen little things here and there. I mean basically just to back up. If I understand this right, I'm pretty sure I remember seeing these over the years that you can, if you want, be it part of the Kiss Army or a different Ticketmaster level, you can watch basically Kiss do a sound check for 30 to 40 minutes for all their shows and pay extra to see that as part of
it's
club level.
But it's usually an acoustic performance. They even kind of comment on that.
Right. Oh, that is true. Yeah, it's supposed to be something where they just jam. But, so that's a little confusing, because that's actually two different things. That's not really a sound check when they're doing the acoustic. This is like a private show.
Well, this wasn't this a sound was check actually... either. I was going to get onto that. They had, at no point are they ever sound checking. Everything is already sound checked. They go up there, put their guitars on, talk to the audience, and then start playing. There's no run through to see that the monitors are working. They're not mixing the drums. They're not getting levels. Gene's not saying, "Could I get more of Paul, or could I get less of Paul?" Depends on what he wants.
Right.
But I think that's all part of that VIP package where you get to stand in front of them. Now they got rid of the plastic. It looks like no more kissing a zoo. But you have to stand like 6 feet in front of them. I think it's $1,000, and then you get that, and you get to see him perform acoustically. And this was they did this one electric, and then of course Gene. The weird thing is that Gene's the first one on stage, really, mm-hmm. but he's in a robe, and he apparently was dying, and he's naked underneath it, and which he proves at one point. He said he was just getting his hair dyed, which I had no idea he was dyeing his hair.
Yeah, that was a big surprise. But no, so imagine you're a VIP and everybody shows up, you know, wearing jeans and a t-shirt or whatever. And Gene strolls out in his, you know, Holiday Inn Express robe or whatever. And, you know, to me, what it signaled was that it's been 50 goddamn years and I will be, nobody's going to say that I'm ever showing up late for anything. So he's still Mr. Punctual, first man on stage.
Never missed a day of school.
You know, never tardy and all that stuff. And he's like, screw it. You know, maybe he lost track of time. He's getting up in his years and he's like, oh, done. I'm not dressed yet. I'm still getting into the stage on time. So that's what I saw the robe as. You know,
I like that. I didn't think about it quite that hard. And I actually went LC on this. This is one of those instances where you broke it down a little further than I did. I actually, it would have been more like in the sense of like if it was me and I paid and that's what I got, I don't know if I would have been offended or if I would have been kind of like, this is actually kind of novel. I'm seeing something that you don't get every time, which is just kind of a human moment too. But Paul did not seem very happy with it.
Well, yeah, he threw some shade his direction about. I think he was mentioning in this corner weighing 240 pounds, you know, like a boxer. 242 pounds.
Yeah,
whatever it was, he had that going on. But
Paul's favorite sport, by the way, is boxing.
Oh, I did not know that. Yeah. Okay, mostly his band members and anybody around him, as far as being angry at them.
He was chippy the whole time.
Oh, my God. And that's the whole thing is, here's the thing. Like, I only watched this. I was going to watch this clip just because it was a random thing. And it just says, you know, Gene in a robe. How can I not watch 2-3 minutes? And I just let it play. And there are so many little nuggets in this 30 minutes that I'd like us to get into. And I don't mean to. You want to jump in here?
Or nope. Carry on, man.
But the thing that got me is first, they played a little bit of somewhat deep cuts or whatever you want to say, but my point is that the robe and Gene, maybe it's because he thinks he's singing in the shower or whatever it is, or right after the shower and he's feeling nice and relaxed. I thought Gene throughout this entire performance sounded fucking great.
100%. That was my very first takeaway musically. Was that what was the first song they played? Plaster Caster.
Plaster Caster going blind. He's not shortchanging it.
When they got into Plaster Caster, I was like, he was nailing it. I was like, fuck, this sounds fucking amazing.
Right?
And then okay. Paul sings the next song, and before he says it, he's like,
can you sing it? So can I.
He started singing, and I'm watching this video on the phone now because I'm listening to it on the Bluetooth stereo in the kitchen, and I go over because I'm like, he sounds not that bad. And then we get to the second verse, and suddenly, Croaky Paul is back. He has about enough vocal cord to do one verse, and then the rest of the thing is shot. And then it was just back to these horrible, horrible sounding vocals. And yeah, Paul, good for you. You showed us all.
But that's my point, is that but even before that, he starts with chippiness of saying,
we're going to do the same thing we do during the show. We're going to fake playing and lip sync.
Whoa. He's actually like kind of acknowledging all the bullshit out there at the soundcheck. Yeah. Like, and he says it not once, but a few times saying like, yeah, we're just faking everything and we're not playing our music. Or,
oh, Kiss must have shown up because now that we're playing. Yeah,
why even do a soundcheck? Because like, yeah, and then he'd like... But the it was just the difference between the two with their vocal abilities is just staggering from this clip. But there's a lot of chippiness going back and forth through the whole.
Well, I think it's actually just going one direction. I think everybody's just absorbing it and moving on. Sure. I didn't really see it from the other guys, but and you know, I got to tell you, Tommy looked great.
Oh, yeah.
He showered, dressed, hair looked good. Showed up ready to work on time, ready to work. Unlike Gene, just showed up on time, but he was not ready. So.
No, he's not ready to go.
I think this counts as a tardy, Gene, because you need to go home and get dressed. You know,
But no, then they had, what were some other little things that you noticed?
I like the Grateful Dead joke, even though it was another side of Chippy Paul. Somebody, when they were taking questions, asked him, because someone asked him about them, like there's supposedly a show that the Grateful Dead bootlegger recorded of Kiss playing a Grateful Dead song. And Paul said, well, we do have something in common with the Grateful Dead. We know their music as well as they do, which was a shot at them as a band. And then they actually, Gene and Paul kind of had a little fun with some song I've never heard of that the guy mentioned. But anyway.
Yeah, but then you also had a spoken word rendition of Burn, Bitch, Burn.
I'll give you a little closure. Burn, Bitch, Burn has a middle section that goes, I've got nasty habits, it's a fine line, so many girls in so little time. When love rears its head, I want to get on your case. I want to put my love in your fireplace.
Yeah, I love that. I it's like it's a fireplace kind of reading. I could just imagine Gene in a big chair with a book. That was enjoyable.
Making fun of his own lyrics. That was great.
But that was also like him kind of deflecting a cheap shot from Paul. Because someone asked him about songs from the 80s. I couldn't hear the question. But he's like, well, it would have to be Burn, Bitch, Burn. It was a sarcastic kind of response. And
It was also about the fact that he was saying like he sang too high and those. So he didn't think about the fact that he'd be wanted to sing them 35 years later. Here's something about the 80s stuff. They had that.
Well, if you heard those songs he referenced, he didn't have to worry about singing those 30 years later. No one wants to fucking hear it, man.
I know, like My Way.
Yeah, My Way. What was the one? I'll Fight Hell to Hold You. Yeah, those are on the fucking... those are the first songs people are talking about. Oh, you should play more from the 80s stuff. Yeah, and by the way, Burn, Bitch, Burn, better than both those fucking songs.
And then, of course, you saw, I don't know if you noticed, if you made it all the way to the end, but it had room service. They started playing room service for a bit. And then Paul, like in the middle of it, just leaves. They're in the middle of playing. He does a little dance. He does like a da-da-da-da-da-da, like a That's All Folks kind of move, like halfway through the verse. And he just walks away, and the rest of the band is just playing, and that's fucking it. And then they just, they're gone.
I enjoyed that quite a bit because at the beginning of that, just as a musician and being in bands and stuff, just that like, God, how do we play that again? You can tell they weren't ready to play. And so it was kind of cool that they kind of fucked around with it a little bit and then got into it. And then, whatever. I don't think Paul started getting into that with the idea that they were going to run through the whole thing. So I don't know.
Yeah.
I thought it was neat. I liked it.
Yeah, so then it just ended, and then Gene was walked away and pulled up the back of his robe to show his ass on the way out on the way off of the stage. So it's like so you got to get a little bit of old man ass and thigh action before they left.
Doesn't it seem like Gene like morphs between like a pretty thin, not 70s Gene thin, but you know, like a thinner version, and then also kind of like a fat version. Like, I don't know if it was the robe, but he looked fucking fat as fuck in that thing. But then we saw him in St. Paul that summer, and I was
looked fine.
I was actually amazed at how thin he looked. But anytime he's in costume, he has all that shit on too, and it looks. It just, and also I think it's because he has such a fucking giant pumpkin head. It just it makes him look fatter. I don't know. It's just the way it is.
Yeah, it's interesting thing, but it was easily.
He's like an ugly Nathan Fillion.
What? I don't even understand. Is this Billie Eilish's friend?
I don't know. You don't know who Nathan Fillion is, huh? At least
not off the top of my head.
Half a dozen people listening might get that one, but
That's good. Okay,
my kind of joke.
Excellent. What I don't understand is if anybody was upset, I would have been thrilled with that little performance because it was very unique and there's a lot of banter. But just bizarre.
I'll take that over the acoustic performances I've seen.
Yeah.
I mean, those do nothing for me. It's just a tiny drum kit in a hallway. And a dozen people hanging around Kiss while they play the same songs they're going to play the next night for the VIP group. And I don't know, this seemed more organic and kind of happening, you know, everything from Gene in a robe to, you know, Tommy looking all dapper to Paul being snarky with every question. I don't know.
Yep. No. So what we recommend is just Google Gene Simmons in a robe. And hit play. You don't even need to watch it.
Just go to Metal Sludge. It's like the only thing going on there right now.
Yeah. Just hit play. and do some chores. Listen to it like you would an audio, like a podcast. Seriously, that's what
yeah,
I do.
Yeah, audio is actually pretty solid on this for it a is. Cell phone video.
It
yeah.
is. So it is a bizarre fly on the wall kind of experience. But what else you got, man?
You know, that's probably enough for today, buddy. We'll save the rest for fodder down the road.
Excellent. Fodder down the road. I like it. You want to get out of here?
Yeah, man, this has been fun, but let's wrap it up.
All right. Rock's not dead.
You are, you robe-wearing bitch.
What's the next line of bullshit you have to go through?
Is your head shaved?
Huh? No.
Is your
why?
Head shaved? I don't see signs of any hair when you took the headphones off. No, it is really.
They did them tight, the sideburns.
Tight. I like to keep my lettuce tight.
Steaming piss flaps around my nose.
Hey, this is Liberty DeVito.
This is Mike Del Judas.
This is Michael Cavanaugh from Broadway's Moving Out.
This is John Jackson, director of the Billy Joel Archive.
This is Russell Javers.
This is Richie Cannata, and you're listening to Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast. It's awesome.
I'm Michael Grosvenor.
And I'm Jack Fernino.
We're lifelong Billy Joel fans who launched a podcast in 2020 celebrating the music we love.
Whether you're looking for the greatest hits or the B-sides and rarities, you'll find it all here. And if you've ever wondered what happens behind the scenes of a concert or recording session, we've got you covered.
Join us as we explore albums, tours, band members, the latest news, and more. You'll also get a unique glimpse into the music industry straight from the musicians and other professionals who help make it all happen.
Tune in to Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast, at glasshousespod.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast, is a proud member of the Pantheon Podcasts Network.